Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you came by. You know, this time of year, well, this is pretty early winter for most of us. Certainly here in Florida, this is cold for us this time of year. And I've been watching the news this morning and all of the snowy postings on Facebook and all of the things on the Today Show about the snow. There's places in Buffalo where people are literally snowed in. I mean, really, really snowed in. So even though before all of this snow fell on us, I had intended to talk about homelessness today because of some information I picked up in the last couple of weeks. I woke up this morning and I thought to myself, how many people won't ever get warm today? I mean that, won't ever. You know how when you get so cold that your insides are shaking? And you wrap yourself around yourself, and even if you have a coat, even if you have decent footwear, even if you have gloves and a hat, if you're out in the weather, when the weather is like this, you're not going to be warm. So I thought to myself, this is the perfect day to talk about this issue. And the numbers are staggering. And last year, I had a gentleman on the show who is, he spends his life trying to figure out what to do about homelessness. And there's been an ad recently. I've seen it on Facebook. I've seen it on TV. I've heard it on the radio. The numbers are always different, but the gist of it is we have so many abandoned homes, so many houses that are perfectly good. I mean, they're probably not on the front page of Better Homes and Gardens, but they're shelter. They have furnaces. They have kitchens and bathrooms and a bed. And according to some of the statistics I've seen, and of course, it's hard to narrow it down because I've found so many. So I'm not, suffice it to say that we could house most of the homeless people if somebody could say with complete authority, if a house has been abandoned for more than a year and a bank owns it, the bank can use it as a write-off, the bank can use it for whatever, and the waiting list of people who have gone through all the paperwork, gone through all the standing in lines, all of the repetition, all of the delving into their inability to keep a shelter for themselves and been embarrassed time and time again, give them that house. I don't see that happening anytime soon, but I like contemplating about the fact that it possibly could. I'm going to bring Shelly in because I'm going to read us some statistics and we're going to talk a little bit about this. And I want to open up some lines of communication with some of you out there. I have a granddaughter who is moving to Missouri. And the reason she's moving is because she has four children. And unless she keeps living with her mom and dad, she can't have a home. She can't work. Her husband is now in Missouri holding down a job, which is a little bit above minimum wage, but not much. With one of them working and four kids, and she has to stay home and take care of the youngest because he has disabilities, they couldn't live here in Florida. They could not live here in Florida. Not without help. So let's bring Shelly in and let's talk about this maybe maybe through talk, like through, like with so many other issues, we can find some answers. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Rini.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Yeah, those statistics are very troubling. You had shared with me the other day a couple of the numbers that you came up with, and I've been thinking about it since you mentioned it to me because I never realized how high it was. But the homelessness situation, like so much else, part of the reason it's there is because people don't understand where homelessness is coming from, and a lot of people that homeless people will look away from them like they're a scourge of society, they got themselves in there, so they're going to have to figure out how to get themselves out, and it's really not that situation. There are some homeless people that got themselves there by just really making bad choices, or maybe they've succumbed to addictions and, they can't hold on to money and things like that. But a very large portion, I'm interested to see what facts you come up with. I believe a large portion of homelessness are families, people that were working and lost their jobs and then lost their homes. And many times they have kids and now they're living out of their cars and things like that. And then, I mean, that's a large cross section of the homeless in this country. And a lot of times people don't even know it. Some of these shows I watched showed that this one girl, Undercover Boss, and the
right.
guy, the owner of the company had gone undercover, and he was talking to one of his better workers, and he found out she was homeless. And here she's working a job. I forgot how she lost her apartment. Thank God she was able to keep her car, but she couldn't put gas in it, so she was using her car as a place to live and sleep at night. So
Shelley, we lost you. Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Shelly must be on her. Well, she shows she's still on my dashboard, but Shell? Well, that happens a lot, by the way. People have a job, and people are working, but they still can't keep a roof over their heads. They still are not making enough money to make ends meet. There's still places like YMCAs. There's still lots of government-funded places that are helping, for sure. But a good majority of them are overcrowded. A good majority of them can't handle anymore. It's kind of scary. The latest statistics that I found were organized in July of 2014. The number of homeless people in the United States of America is 1,750,000. Wrap your brains around that. 1,750,000 people. That is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Something's wrong someplace. Something is really wrong someplace. I don't know if there's any fix to 1,750,000 homeless people. That's a huge, huge number. However, if you find places where people can be taken in. Shelley, did I get you back?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Shell, we can't hear you. Maybe dial in on the cell phone. I don't know. But you're not here, honey. So, in with these numbers, the average monthly income for a homeless individual is $348. You're there.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. You are now in the host queue.
Shelley? Well, she's here now. Let me see if I can bring her in. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was interesting.
Well, because I had my home phone and my cell phone both there, so it must have created a loop.
Well, we lost you early on in your conversation. Did I just lose you again? Okay.
I called back right away, but then I guess you couldn't hear me. So then I called back on my cell phone, but I still had my home phone on, so it made this weird whirling noise.
Yeah, and we could hear Blog Talk giving you a message on the air. So anyway, let me did you hear the number, honey, of how many homeless people in the United States?
Yeah.
1,750,000. And the average monthly income for a homeless individual is $348, which is, you know, what does $348 do for you in a 30-day span? That's like 14 cents a day. Would that be close to even being right? 14 cents a day. $348 a month is what most of the average monthly income.
Well, that's like $10 a day.
$10 a day? Okay.
Yes. 30 days in a month. Yeah. $10
mm-hmm.
a day. But still, $10 a day, you can't feed yourself for $10 a day.
No. No.
And
there wouldn't be any option. Well, apparently some of them get by on it. The percent of homelessness do not get enough to eat daily is 28%, but that's thanks to people like our old friend there, Albert, who's here in Fort Lauderdale. The percent of homelessness that did paid work during the past month was 44%. Now, this was in July of 2014. And again, in some of your states, some of these people do like side jobs, like rake up leaves, shovel sidewalks, things like that to earn that little bit of income. The percent of homelessness that have problems with alcohol, drug abuse, or mental illness is a very, very large number, which is not shocking but is disappointing, is 66%. The percentage of homeless persons that have been sexually assaulted is much less, thank God, 7%. People that have been homeless for more than 2 years is up to 30%. And homeless women that are all alone, that have no partner, is high also. That's 40%. Mm-hmm. But the big, the number of Americans who live on the edge of hunger is 31 million. The number of people in a soup kitchen who are kids is at 20%. But now listen to this, and this is what blows me away. And I can't do the math in my head, and I didn't work it out on a sheet of paper. But number of families who are lodging nightly in city shelters in New York City, 6,252. Now, that's quite a few families. And let's say the average family is 3 to 4 people. That's a lot of people. So we're doing stuff. We're just not doing enough. We're trying, but we're not trying hard enough. And there is a school of thought that some people, and I said this to the man who was the advocate for the homeless on the show that day, I said, isn't some of this by choice? And he got, remember how upset he got with me?
Yes.
He said, no, it's never a choice. And I said, I don't know, because I've watched interviews, I've seen things before, shows and things like that, that some people want to check out from society. And they make the choice to I don't know, not to be homeless, but to not be a part of what everybody else is doing. Maybe that's the way I said it wrong. Because I've seen interviews, and I've watched, I've even talked to people that are homeless. In Ithaca, even though it's cold climate and everything, there's a really large homeless population in Ithaca. They have the Hobo Jungle, which is downtown Ithaca, and everybody still talks about it. And
wow.
It houses a lot of people. And Ithaca has a relatively good welfare program. They have, you know, an office right downtown, and it's accessible. You don't have to ride 3 buses to get there. It's close. And Ithaca also has a large population of the mentally ill. And I talked about this the weeks that we talked about mental illness. Because it's so close to Willard State Hospital, it's one of the townships where a lot of the people that leave the state hospital can set up housekeeping, so to speak. And there's homes that are designated for to help them as well. So when we do shows like this, I feel like I'm blaming somebody, and I'm not. I don't feel, I've read enough now to know that there's a lot of stuff being done. It's just not enough, Shell. It's just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
The food stamps, the number of kids that are recipients of the food stamps are 9,300,000. So domestic violence is a big part of homelessness. The fact that a couple is trying to make a go of it and they have children and the stress gets so heavy that one or both of them give up. And alone, they can't do it. You know, just alone, it's almost impossible. The largest number, though, percentage-wise of homeless is single men. And the largest number, when you talk about Asians, Native Americans, Hispanics, white people, and African American is African American. The second in line is white. Very small Asian homelessness, 1%, Native American, 2%, Hispanic, 12%. And I want to say, and this is just off the cuff, and I could be wrong, wouldn't probably be the first time and for sure won't be the last. Hispanic people, Native American people, and Asian people seem to stick together really, really well. And in most cases, we all try to, but some of us are not successful at it. The number of kids in the United States that are below the poverty level are 12 million. So, I think the issue is each state apparently governs their own handling of homelessness. And I mentioned in the beginning of the show, my granddaughter is moving back to Missouri. And the reason she's doing that is because, first of all, her husband was able to land a job that has panned out fairly well. Not a lot of money, but some money. And they got what they call a Section 8. But there was a long waiting list. It's taken them almost 2 years to get to the top of this waiting list. But now that they're there, they've already, Melissa brought home pictures of the apartment that they're going to help them with. They have to pay most of the rent, but they do give them, they give them almost like an allowance to help with FP&L and the rent. And the money that they pay to the government for the Section 8, a part of that goes into a savings. This is what I found to be wonderful. A part of that money goes into the savings because there's already been allotted money from the government for the housing. But to get them to stand on their own 2 feet, a part of that money goes into the savings. And once they've stuck to it, kept jobs, take care of the home, all that kind of stuff, then some of that money is given back to them and they're helped to find their own home that they will own. Isn't that a wonderful program?
Oh, that's an amazing program.
And I don't know.
Program available?
Well, I guess it's available in a lot more places than we know. The issue is, though, is there's just such long waiting lines, and there's such long lists of people who have applied, and you have to keep renewing. You know, it's the same with any kind of support from the government. You have to reapply. Food stamps have to be reapplied for, sometimes monthly, sometimes every 3 months, sometimes twice a year. It all depends on how they've got it set up. But if things change, you have to be honest, report them, and once they think you can do it on your own with the paperwork that you present to them, you don't get help anymore.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know if the real answer, I mean, you know, there's different schools of thought. If you help somebody too much, you're an enabler, right? I mean, we've talked about that on the show. We've talked about that personally. We kind of get that can be true in some scenarios. And we've talked about the fact that when you help somebody, putting your hand out and helping them up is one thing, but carrying them is another.
Right.
And
you don't want to give them a handout, you want to give them a hands up. Exactly.
Right, right. So it is about what the government is able to do, how they run it, how it is, how it's put into motion. And I think that one of the saddest things that I know, other than there's single men, there's single women, there's families with children, which is 36%, but then there's a very small percentage of kids that are on their own with no adults in the picture. And for the entirety of the United States of America, that's 7%.
So 7% of homeless children without family?
Yes, that are just on their own on the street. And when we know the number is one... Say that again?
When they say children, what age range are they talking?
Well, I would imagine that's under 18. Period. 7% under 18.
Wow.
So, and of course, we did several stories about street prostitution and drugs and all that kind of stuff, and how many of that population is homeless teens. Any given day in the state, in our area, in the state of Florida, which is not South Florida, not Miami, for those of you who have never been to Florida, we're kind of like, what would you say, like a quarter of the way up the state. If you go from the south, the southmost point, we're probably, come to us.
About a quarter of the way, that sounds right.
Yeah, about a quarter of the way up. And any given day, you can see young people, old people, veterans, at least with signs that say that they're veterans, standing on busy streets with signs. And very recently, this summer, there was a young woman, I'm going to guess 35 to 38, standing on a median over on 441 right by Wellington Regional Hospital. Lots of traffic. 441 Route 7 is a very, very traveled road. It's west in our state and pretty much travels half of the state. She's standing on the corner, or on the, in the middle of the median, and on the corner of on the east northeast corner is a man in a wheelchair. And she has a sign that says, we are homeless. My husband is dying of cancer. We need help. And there's no children with them, but at the bottom of the sign it said something like two kids or something like that, as I recall. But I never saw the kids out there with them. And some families, the children and everybody's out there. So I want to say a good month went by, because this is when Spike and I were going to that part of town every day, because it was where he was getting his some of his treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So a good month, maybe even 6 weeks, went by, and we pulled up one day, and there's no wheelchair, and she has a new sign that says, "My husband has passed. I still need help, please." And people were donating. You don't see what people hand, but she's not there anymore. This, like I said, this was at the beginning of the summer, and now we're almost to the end of the year. So, but it made me think about if she could stand out in the sunshine all day long on her feet, why didn't somebody give her a job, Shell? Why didn't somebody give her a job? Instead of handing her a dollar bill or even a $10 bill, all the business people that were on that street, do you wonder if anybody said, get yourself cleaned up, come see me, I'll give you a job?
Yeah.
Because when you talk about a helping hand, that's the best helping hand you can do. Do you remember during 2005 when we had all those hurricanes? And there were people on every corner, every entrance to 95, every entrance to the turnpike. There'd be 5, 6, 7 people standing there looking, you know, saying, my business got closed because of the hurricanes. Please help, stuff like that. I was driving a van then, and I would pull up and say, I don't have any money to give you, but if you'll come help at the Institute today, I'll pay you for the day. And the first day, I brought two people. The second day, I brought the two people and one more person. At the end of the week, all three were out there. Only one came with me every day that week. The other two stayed and with their signs and didn't come work.
Yep, I remember that. This is part of the issue. Some of the people that are homeless are homeless because they lack the sponsor. And that's a small percentage. So I'm not saying this to insult anybody, because I believe most of the homeless are homeless because of circumstances. Okay, but there's a large amount of homeless people that just aren't willing to work, and they expect society to give them a handout. So that's part of the thing that gives people, like, where they reel back and they don't want to get involved in helping the homeless because maybe they've had interactions with these type of people. I've probably four different types of homeless people. I've met a homeless person that didn't want any help. If you tried to offer help to this man, he didn't want it. He, like you said, he withdrew from society. He probably had some emotional issues going on because he did have a traumatic life. But early on in his life, he was a businessman. Something happened to him. So it wasn't a true choice. It's where his reaction to life brought him, and he had decided to check out. He seemed to be okay with where he was, and he was refusing help. He was one of these homeless people that didn't want you to come near him. He wanted to be left alone. But I got in a conversation with him one day. I was in the city, and I guess, I don't know, maybe he liked the way I smiled or something. He actually spoke to me. A lot of people wouldn't go near him. I've also met homeless people that just had a rash of bad luck. You know, they were homeowners, they had a nice job, and then over a 2 or 3 year period of time, one thing after another happened, illness, you know, stuff like that, and then all of a sudden here, you know, a family of four or five were out on the street. I didn't know them personally, but I knew them through a friend of mine of someone this happened to. So here you have both ends of the spectrum, and then I know people that are homeless because they become addicted to some sort of substance and couldn't get help, didn't get help, refused to get help, whatever, and they ended up being tossed out by their family, you know, tough love type of thing, and here, you can't live here if you're going to do these things. So that's what makes it difficult when you talk about homeless, because there's so many different scenarios, and you're not going to be able to give the same type of help to somebody who's out on the street because they're an addict and they're stealing from their family, and their family finally got up, you know, did tough love and said, look, you can't live here unless you're going to go and get clean, so now you're out on your own, figure out how to live. Or to the family of four because the husband lost his job of, you know, 15 years and can't get another job and they lost their home. You know, so there has to be some sort of centralized help. And that's what we're lacking in this country is centralized help. There has to be a way for homeless people to go somewhere and have like a one-stop shopping, so to speak. If you're homeless, you go to this place and find out what assistance is available to you. Because there is some assistance out there, but a lot of homeless people don't even know where to start looking for it. I saw what my niece went through when her husband was between jobs, you know? And it's like, oh, my God, it was, like, so complicated. And one agency, you know, one agency said he didn't make enough. One agency said he was making too much. One agency, you know, she got bounced around for days until she finally found the right agency. And then everything had to be done on the website. Well, if you're homeless, how do you apply online if
Amen.
You're homeless?
Amen. Amen. So, that sentence that you just said right there is the crux, honey. It's the crux.
Mm-hmm.
It's where it just all falls apart. Yes.
Yep. Yep.
It's just
so
like unemployment. Unemployment deal.
So something should be done on a governmental level. To have all these resources under one supervision, under one cap, and if you are in that situation, you have to go there and basically go through a consultation, and that person that you're speaking to says, okay, well, because of your circumstances, you're entitled to this. Here's this agency. Go across the hall and fill out these forms, but have it all done in one. I don't understand why that can't be done. I understand that you can't have one type of help for everybody because, like I gave a few examples, because there's so many different reasons why people become homeless, and you can't reward people's bad behavior. And some people are homeless because they've done wrong things. They put themselves in that position. They can fix their own lives. But for the people that are really succumbing to, you know, to the changing economy, to downsizing at companies and things like that, you know, but this is somebody who's willing to work, who has skills, there have to be other resources available for them. And I cannot believe in a country as resourceful as the United States that our government can't pull together. Well, our government can't get itself out of trouble, so I guess I am being a little unrealistic here. But, you know, there should be a way to have some sort of governing body that has an umbrella and say, okay, these are your options, and in your circumstances, this is the one that fits your circumstances. Because half the time, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You have all these organizations out there, and there's too many things that fall through the cracks. There either there's too much crossover, people that fall through the cracks, and they're not entitled to anything. So it is frustrating when somebody's trying to look for help. And, like, you know, you and I can sit here and do the research. But if you're talking about a homeless person, how do they do the research?
Right. Well, that's like I said, this is the whole crux. We're set up in a world of really advanced technology. but it's only advanced technology to the people who are living in that part of the world. If you're living in the homeless world, if you're living in the below poverty level world, you do not have that technology. Granted, I think it's amusing when I see how many people cannot live without a cell phone today, homeless people included. But then I think to myself, well, you know, if you want to have anything that touches that world, a cell phone is the most economical thing to have. So maybe I would have made that decision as well. Keep my cell phone and lose my home. I don't know. We have been homeless, by the way.
Yeah,
Spike and I and the kids have been homeless, but we weren't jobless. But the reason we were homeless is because we couldn't find anything that was within our means in 1982 that would fit a family of six. So, we did what we needed to do. Everybody got up every morning and showered in the shower house at the park, and we did what we had to do. But I because of that, because things can happen and things can change your life in a nanosecond. And that's the truth.
But you remember the movie In Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith and his son Jaden Smith, a true story of the man who he had his son, his wife just took off, he lost his job, everything happened like within a couple of weeks of each other. When he lost his job, he lost his apartment, he lost his car, I mean, everything, literally overnight, but he was brilliant. He had a brilliant mind, and he was trying to get a job. He found a job at a brokerage company, but he had to work there as an intern at first, so he still wasn't making any money. But if he got hired, he was going to be making big money, and it showed his whole trials and tribulations of how he had to go to these different shelters with his son because he literally had no money. He had no way. I don't know. He had these boxes that he was – these electrical boxes, but I don't remember what the equipment was. But he would fix them and sell them to get a couple $100, just enough to buy him a little bit more time and keep feeding his son. But it was a true rags-to-riches story of how he – it's so ironic that you're doing this story, and it was just on the TV day before yesterday, so I watched it again. But this is a true story of somebody who was homeless who just kept fighting back against the system. He was not willing – to remain homeless. He was not willing to be poor. You know, he was, you heard his conversations with his son, and every time they would talk, he would never let his son feel poor, even though they're homeless and out on the street. And what he did, which I thought was amazing, is that he would constantly talk to his son about what it was going to be like when they had money and when they could do things. And then that ended up actually happening for him because he didn't allow his circumstances to make him believe that he couldn't do any further. There's a lot of messages in that story, true stories. And it really is because it's a true story, it's not like Pretty Woman, which is like, you know, just a made-up story about romance and stuff. This was an actual true story about how this guy who was completely homeless beat the system. Because he kept looking for where the money was. One of the things I learned in this real estate course, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but people, real estate investors, need a lot of people helping them, and they will pay referrals. If you're out on the street and you're walking the street, you should try to meet up. If you go to like auctions and things like that, and you're respectful and you're dressed nicely, you can walk up to one of these investors and say, you know, what type of houses are you looking for? You know, I don't mind walking around a lot because they pay referral fees for this information. They can't be everywhere. they need people finding these houses and bringing good deals back to them. So that, you know, there are other ways of making money. If you can find out how rich people are making money and then figure out how you can assist them in that, people who have money, and remember, there's not a shortage of money. The problem right now in this country is that it's moving too much to the people who already have wealth. The whole adage, the wealthy people are getting wealthier, is absolutely true. There's not a shortage of money, okay? Wealthy people right now are getting wealthier because they understand how to work with money. So one of my suggestions for people that are homeless is look in newspapers or magazines. You know, you can go, you don't have to buy them. You can go to the library and look at what wealthy people are doing. If you can approach a wealthy person or a wealthy company that is doing certain things, and you can offer them a service, look at what they're doing and how you might be able to help them to do that. Wealthy people will always leverage the labor of others instead of doing the labor themselves. It's worth it to them because if they're not doing these individual tasks over here that allows them to get involved in more deals, they can keep turning their money over. And this is one of the things that we learned in the course across many different types of investment. And some of the people that have gone from rags to riches have done exactly that. They've looked at what wealthy people are doing and figured out how they could help them to
take
some of...
Honey, you got both each other?
What?
Michelle? You have your cell phone and your house phone sitting beside each other?
No.
Okay, because I keep picking up on a sound from usually happens when two devices are too close to each other.
Are you still hearing it now?
No.
Okay.
But it was buzzing.
Okay. Well, I had it near my laptop. Maybe it was picking up energy from the laptop's off, but it's still plugged in, so maybe it was picking up energy from the laptop.
Okay.
So I just moved it.
Yeah, because it's gone now.
But
well, and I think... That's a good deal of input, and we still are going to do a show about that and maybe help some people and change some lives in that respect. But again, you know, when we talk about some of this stuff, you know, what's the availability of the people we're talking about right now, even here in this show? There isn't any. So it is about the people that are helping. One of the things that I came across that I do want to share, though, because it shows that people are thinking, but bringing everything to fruition. And of course, I never trust numbers because numbers are only as good as the people who counted them. And I don't know how much effort goes into that. But there's an executive summary in the state of homelessness, and this was written in 2013. The state of homelessness in America 2013 examines trends in homelessness between 2011 and 2012, as well as the economic, housing, and demographic context in which homelessness changes over time. The report shows that overall the homelessness population decreased by less than 1%, but this is not the full story. I'm sure that's true. While the number of people experiencing homelessness as part of a family increased slightly, the number of individuals experiencing chronic homelessness and those identifying as veterans decreased significantly. The mixed findings may be related to policy changes as well as to the economic climate in which these changes are taking place. Increased federal investment in effective solutions, such as permanent supportive housing, has been aimed at veterans and chronically homeless individuals. Also, during this time period, flexible federal resources were available to communities through the Homelessness Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program. That's called HPRP, Homeless Prevention and Rapid Rehousing Program, to help prevent and end homelessness for families and individuals. Despite these resources, My computer went off because I wasn't moving the mouse. Despite these resources, increased competition for housing resources and growing housing cost burden, combined with increases in the size of the population living in doubled-up situations and poor single adult-headed families, making and attaining and maintaining housing more difficult for families and single adults who are not chronically homeless. In other words, they're finally delving in to the lower middle class who works, two people in the house work at a minimum wage job, maybe work extra hours every week because they're not given time and a half, but they still get straight pay for a 50-hour week or whatever the case might be. But you cannot have an apartment and a car and a phone and electricity if two people in your house are making minimum wage. You cannot. It's monetarily impossible. I have two grandsons and the girlfriend of one of the grandsons and the girlfriend's brother who all live in a two-bedroom apartment. The rent is, I think it's like $1,100 a month. And
wow.
Their utilities run them like $300, $350 a month for this little two-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath apartment. If they're not all working, one of them right now is out of a job, so everybody is struggling to keep food on the table and to keep the electricity on. And my oldest grandson is making, you know, over $14 an hour. And that's almost double what minimum wage is.
Right. What is minimum wage? Is it $7?
It's I think it's like $7.93 now, $7.83, something like that, almost $8 an hour. Which is like a joke.
What was it, like 2 years ago they were talking about passing a law that minimum wage had to be raised to $10? Whatever happened with that?
Well, now they're talking about making it even more than that, but they just talk. And you can't get, you know, there's also laws, I guess we'll call them laws, that are designed to help mom-and-pop businesses. So if you can prove that your yearly or monthly income in your small business does not constitute so much money, then I can get you to work at my place for $5 an hour, it's okay. I can do that. If I can prove that I don't make enough money to pay you any more than that and you agree to work for that, then we're cool.
Wow.
So a lot of the scenarios are of that. But then you also have places that people are working for 7 to 10 years and started out 10 years ago, which was 2004, $7 an hour. And their little raises they're still, after 10 years, because a lot of times you go 2 years without any kind of a review or any kind of a raise, and sometimes it's a percentage. In big hotels and big corporations, it's a percentage of what your yearly income is, and sometimes that's 3%, Shel.
I know.
2%. So in some cases, those people that are still working those jobs, and I'm talking about, you know, like laborious jobs, like maids and landscapers and general cleanup kind of deal, these people still, in a lot of different cases, because they are long-term employees, obviously worth their salt, otherwise they wouldn't still be there, are still making under $10 an hour. And then when they are lucky enough to get insurance, what happens to that $400 paycheck? Right?
That's right.
So
that's right.
They're addressing some of it. But, of course, if you want to talk about homelessness, the first place you need to go to is minimum wage. And they keep talking about going there, but that's all it is talk. And that's what I think is so upsetting, is the fact that until that changes, I mean, they can't get blood from a stone. They can't be the best budgeter or the best balancing act in the world. You still can't get what you don't have, right?
Right. And I also think the unemployment rules are ridiculous, because if you have somebody that was working, making $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 a year, and then they lose their job, they're paid at the same rate as somebody who was making $15,000 a year. So that's why a lot of these families have lost everything, because the husband or the wife or whoever was the breadwinner, you know, was earning $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. And then on the unemployment, because that's what happened to me those 2 years that I was out of work, I had been making a very, very high salary. And then when I went to collect unemployment, everybody was, that was during that 2 years that everybody was laying their staff off.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get another, I mean, I could get a job, but all the jobs were at minimum wage. I was making more on unemployment than I was. So what was the point of taking a job? That's ridiculous. No job was paying, you know, at $10 an hour after taxes, I would have netted less than I was getting on unemployment. So even though it was more than minimum wage, it didn't pay to, you know, I mean, I interviewed anyway, but I certainly didn't want to get any of these jobs. You know, I would just sit home and work on other stuff. You know, I was getting a lot of other things done. But it was shocking to me that the money I was making on these jobs had no bearing on the unemployment. The unemployment just capped out at a certain amount, and it was for, like, somebody making maybe $25,000 to $30,000 a year, and that's it. If you made any more than that, it had no bearing on the amount of unemployment you got. So people that had homes for families weren't able to make the payments anymore on what they were getting on unemployment. They could put food on the table and maybe maintain their car, but they couldn't maintain their homes. And that's where so much homelessness came from in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
So
unemployment
Let's face it.
The other thing that nobody ever talks about in all the statistics I read and all the information that's been compiled by different people who have obviously surveyed, done questionnaires, things like that, is the opportunity for a broken AC, the opportunity for a car that, you know, takes a poop and doesn't run anymore, or a leak in your ceiling, or all of the things, one of those kind of things, the car, your furnace or your AC or your roof, one of those things happen and you're done. You're done.
Yeah.
You cannot, first of all, you either can't fix it, period, or you get the family handyman to fix it for you, or you get this or you get that, you're done. Because, or the most devastating, of course, of everything is when there is a major illness. And all that insurance that you've been paying for, that they've been taking out of, they took insurance money partially out of my husband.
You're breaking up, Renee.
Are you there, Shell?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. My phone just died right in the middle of the conversation and went to a off the hook tone. So I just dialed back in. So did you hear most of what I said?
Well, you started talking about the what was going on with Spike with the medication, I think.
Well, everything that happened to him in the last.
The insurance.
Yes, Well, he had insurance, and he paid insurance his whole 50 years of working. And unemployment insurance he paid for. He never used unemployment. He never was sick the whole time he was working. I mean, the only thing he ever did was hurt himself on the job, and then, workers' compensation would pick that up, but not the actual health insurance. And now he's 71 years old, and for the last almost 4 years now, he has had everything from pneumonia to heart failure to carotid surgery to an aortic aneurysm to cancer. And it has cost us to the tune of around $30,000 in the last 4 years of what insurance doesn't pick up.
All right.
So in the meantime, though, all that money that he put in for 50 years, nobody said, well, here, let me give you a check for all that you paid in and never used.
Right, right. It's astonishing that insurance didn't pick up that much. That's just crazy.
Well, because everything is different copays, and every medication is a different copay, and every scan is a different copay. We're almost out of time, though, so I apologize for all the phone stuff, but I suspect it's our weather. Even though we are not covered in the white stuff, it's drizzly. Right now, here where Shelley and I are, it's between 53 and 55 degrees, which is cold for us for November, southern Florida.
That's cold for us.
Yeah, too cold for us. So, but I want everybody to go out and have a great day today. And tomorrow is the day that we would talk about the elephants, remember, Shell, the elephant? So I hope everybody will join us for that. Reminder, on my Facebook page, there's some information. And on the Hippocrates Health Educator page, there's some information about Vibrant Health Institute, which is going to be run by Michael Berganzi and myself. And we are very excited. And you can always call me personally, get on my Facebook page, whatever you'd like to do to find out more about it. It is unbelievably affordable. $500 a week, people. You could stay and have all the wheatgrass your little belly can manage. So everybody go out today and have a great day. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye, Shell.
Bye, Reen. Bye, everyone. Speak to you in the morning.